listening to the Link Through Social Tech and App Show on Listen Up Talk Radio. Yep, we talk apps, we talk social media, and we talk tech every week. Now here's your host, Paul Wright.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Link Through Social Media Tech and App Show on Listen Up Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Wright. We encourage you to interact and keep the conversation going on Twitter using hashtag LTS Radio. We want to hear from you, so tweet your comments, questions, and show ideas. Let's build our online community. On today's show, we will talk with Kevin Montgomery about his car-free app, plus social media and tech news of the week. Right after this, LTS Radio will return.
Looking for a unique, cutting-edge way to connect with your audience? Do you need to expand your reach? Well, I'm Margaret Wallace Duffy from WOW TV, and we have a solution for you and your business. Our interactive live web TV show and interactive tweet chat is a great way to reach your audience and have an ongoing conversation. If you'd like some more information about this unique, cutting-edge way to get your message out, visit wowliving.tv and follow us on hashtag WOWTV.
Welcome back to the Link Through Social Media Tech and App Show. Hey developers, got a cool app you'd like us to review? Get in touch with us on Twitter at Link Through Social. That's LINKTHRU Social, or at Listen Up Talk. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to the Link Through Social Media Tech and App Show on Listen Up Talk Radio. And we're joined by our producer, Todd Miller, as always. How are you, Todd?
Doing well, doing well. Kind of excited about today's guest. You know, we always have these great guests.
Yes, yeah. We've been blessed with many talented people over the last few months since we started the show. And today is, absolutely the same. We're joined by designer and developer of the car-free app, Kevin Montgomery. And you can go to his site, carfree.kemosite. That's K-E-M-O-S-I-T-E.com. Kevin Montgomery, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, very good. Thanks, Paul.
Great, great. Yes, I first came across your app a week or two ago. You had made some posts on Twitter, and you're a fellow Bramptonian as well, so I happened to come across it. What inspired you to develop this app?
Well, this app really came out of a challenge, I guess, that we had sometime last year internally at the office where I work.
Okay.
And we had an internal competition for just coming up with app ideas that we might be able to pitch. Mine was more along the lines of an app for social change, more of an education piece, I suppose, to address the problem of traffic, but also to acknowledge the convenience, I suppose, that draws people to the automobile. So that came, that turned into a concept for an app where you would be able to launch it, and literally just by touching buttons, you tell the app where you want to go, it knows where you are, and it can find you places to visit on your bike within about a 20 to 30 minute ride. So the whole idea was to kind of break the mindset that a car is required for everything. And instead present to you alternatives that are very reasonable to cycle or even walk to.
Excellent. No, it's that's what I really really found interesting about the whole concept is the promotion of cycling or walking, exercising, and I think in this technology world that we live in now, that we've become so used to being indoors a lot, we're not spending nearly enough time outside, and that goes for both children and adults. So this is a great app to inspire people to to get outdoors. Now you're I understand, a very avid cyclist.
Yes, I am. Yep.
what is your opinion of the current bike pass in Peel region and in the GTA as well? I'm sure you've traveled on both.
I have, yeah. Well, speaking to Brampton, I have to give credit to Brampton's pathway system. It is a beautiful, beautiful trail. It's great to ride on a great day for recreational purposes. I think where it meets some challenges is in the case of more of a transportation mindset, where you have a particular destination in mind that you want to go to,
right.
Whether it be the grocery store or even downtown at the last leg of the system where it has to sort of divert around the railway tracks.
Yes.
It can be a bit challenging for people, I think, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this sort of a stigma I sense sometimes that cycling, whether it be year-round cycling or transportation cycling, is sort of a joke or a fad or something like
mm-hmm.
that. But I think it's something that's been demonstrated around the world to be a very real and powerful and useful phenomenon that I think deserves a bit more attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. Todd, are you out on the bike much at all?
Yeah, we've just actually had a new bike path go in not too far away from where I am, and it's in the Hydro Corridor, and they're extending it. And it's a mixture of walkers and bikers, so sometimes mm-hmm. it can get a little hectic as you come up to someone. But this is a great way of repurposing some space that was really basically doing nothing,
right,
and
yeah.
offering it as a very quick way for someone who wants to bike but wants to avoid somewhere that's more crowded with cars.
Mm-hmm.
A great way to get across town quickly.
Now you're in Toronto, as you know. We mentioned earlier we're from Brampton. What would you like to see more of in Toronto, as in terms of bike paths or pedestrian paths, that type of thing?
Yeah, I don't want to open up a debate about bike lanes in the city, because we have them and then we've had them taken out and put back in. So there's
yeah.
that whole argument there. But I'd love to see more of these, like hydro corridors or repurposing existing roads for bikes. But I'd also like to see them connect up to other regions. And I don't know if that's, possible right now, where you can start in Brampton and end up in Toronto.
Right.
You know, at some point you're going to have to get into, heavily trafficked areas and navigate to join up another system. I'd love to see that, where you can go from, literally from Burlington to Oshawa on a bike.
Sure.
That would be amazing.
In your travels, Kevin, is there any sort of connection right now between municipalities in this area?
Well, yes and no. Mm-hmm. There are, I think, if you kind of explore the systems that are available, you can probably find, in terms of east-west travel,
right.
travel to Mississauga, I think, is mostly doable mm-hmm. via the Lakeshore route, Martin Goodman Trail,
right.
and then it appears there's, though I haven't seen it myself, just looking at my own app here, it's telling me
yeah.
that there's some kind of facility along the Queensway that will
okay.
Take you up to Confederation Parkway, where I do know there's a bike lane that will take you north to Square One.
Mm-hmm.
It does appear to cut off at Eglinton, where it transitions to McLaughlin Road up into Brampton. So,
okay.
And I've found in my own experiences trying to find a route north into Brampton is where I run into a challenge every time. So I agree in that regard. More work can be done there in making those
sure.
connections.
Mm-hmm.
It appears, though, just one time when I was trying with myself, going through the airport, I was surprised that there's actually a series of trails there that do
really?
Go a fair distance into Brampton, where there's just a small gap, I guess, through mm-hmm. the 410-407 junction, where you can reconnect to additional pathways. So I think there's some promise there.
Yeah,
I think it's
yeah.
find a way to connect that up.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, we should definitely rally for that, because you know, municipal elections are coming up this year, so that that's something that we should definitely bring up. Actually, speaking of that, I noticed on your Twitter profile that you're going to be running for city councilor.
That's correct.
In wards 3 and 4. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Wish you all the best in that. And yeah, just getting back to the app quickly there. I like how you have the different color codings, you know, that show the different outlines of the roads. The green markings are the roads and paths separated from motor vehicles. The roads that are outlined in yellow are arterial roads that require more caution. And you might want to avoid if you expect vehicles to travel at high speeds, that type of thing. So really, really good app. I commend you on that. And I definitely recommend anyone to go to carfree.kemosite. That's KEMOSITE.com. You can follow Kevin on Twitter at KEMOSITE. And wish you luck becoming Brampton City Councilors for Wards 3 and 4. Anything in closing you'd like to add, Kevin?
I think that covers everything. I perhaps will add that I expect this app to be more of an ongoing community-led project. It's intentionally feeding in data from Google, which is often, you know, subject to updating as more information is provided.
Of course, yes.
So definitely, if there's any errors on this map, there's a site that can be visited, google.com/mapmaker, where suggestions, corrections, things of that like can be suggested to Google. And if approved, this app will be updated.
Terrific, terrific. Well, I appreciate you joining us today, Kevin, and you have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much, Paul. You as well.
Thank you. LTS Radio will be back after this.
Hey, Paul Cavalcante here from the Vinyl Experience Radio Show, Sunday mornings. You provide the bagels and the coffee and the newspaper, and I'll spin the records at 9 a.m. and then an encore at 3 p.m. Missed out? You'll catch the show again at 9 p.m. on Sundays and again at 3 a.m. Monday morning. The Vinyl Experience, 9 and 3. That's all you need to know. Oh, 33, 45, and 78 are important numbers too, but you get the idea.
Welcome back to the Link Through Social Media Tech and App Show, where we talk about, you know, social media, we talk about apps, and we also talk about cool technology. Perhaps you've got a cool piece of technology that you want us to review. Get in touch on Twitter at Link Through Social or at Listen Up Talk. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to LTS Radio. Now, Todd, we're going to talk about Twitter very briefly, first of all. Twitter is testing a favorite people feature. Now, I don't know about you, but I have thousands of followers. And
lucky you.
I'm worried sometimes that I'm going to miss my tweets. Now, being a social media professional, I do use a very popular program called Hootsuite, and I have set up many streams following, you know, specific people that I want to keep an eye on. But Twitter has been testing out the last few months to a select few an option for favorite people. So you can go onto their account, you click it as a favorite people person, and that creates a new timeline that would only consist of your favorite people. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's long overdue, because Facebook's had a feature like that for a while, where you can add certain friends to your favorites, or I can't remember what the terminology is, but basically you can have certain friends. I guess their posts would appear more frequently, and you know, there's way to hide other feeds, that sort of thing. So I think it's overdue and a nice feature.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. So they are testing that out, and hopefully within the next few months, we'll release it to the general public.
And schmoes like us.
Yeah.
know, Facebook and Twitter over the years have done all these random tests, you know, with a select few. I've never been that select few, Todd. Why is this? I'm very offended here.
I don't know.
I'm supposed
to
be the Twitter king. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, hang on a second. Your crown's falling off. But I understand that. I mean, I guess I came from a software background in a previous life. Okay. So there was a very certain mindset that you needed to have to be able to test software. I don't know if it's the same sort of mindset, but they probably have some code or some back end stuff that picks up on patterns and user activity and say this person here would be a good candidate to test this new feature.
I'm sure they do. I just feel kind of left out, I guess.
Well, I'm going to yell at them today. I'm going to say the Twitter king is quite upset.
Oh, goodness. Well, moving along here. The What's Up founder, Jan Koum, wants you to know that your information is safe with him, even after the company is acquired by Facebook.
Wait a second. It's safe with him, where? In his house? In his briefcase? I'm not sure where.
He's got it stored in these massive vaults in his basement.
Well, I'm sure he's got a flash drive that he's going to go drinking and then leave it on a bar or something one day.
It's actually a fact that the WhatsApp knows little about its more than 450 million users compared to the social networking site. It only asks for your phone number and can access the phone number saved in your contact list. And that's not about to change. They were very clear about this. So this Jan Koum went on to say, you don't have to give us your name and we don't ask for your email address. Was a post that was released on the company's blog this week. WhatsApp has never collected or stored information like your birthday, home address, or what you search for on the internet. Facebook announced back in February, as we talked about on this show, that it would pay $19 billion for WhatsApp, just a staggering amount of money, for the most popular messaging service for smartphones. Now, interestingly, you got to hear this, Todd. Koum, who grew up in the Soviet Union during a time when people worried their phone conversations might be monitored by the KGB, said he built WhatsApp with the goal of knowing as little about you as possible and would not have partnered with Facebook if that was going to change. If partnering with Facebook meant that we had to change our values, we wouldn't have done it, he went on to say. So I'm glad that they're sticking to their original core values of knowing not that much about the users, but I don't know. Is it the skepticism that I have is that when a company gets taken over by a vendor, it's all fun and nice at the beginning, but then after a year or so, it just kind of gets sucked into the major conglomerate bubble.
Well, there's a couple of things I'd like to say to that. I mean, the easiest thing is, you know, you get this little pop-up saying Facebook's changed its terms of service or agreement in terms of service. And, you know, who reads those? So somewhere in one of those little missives that they put out at some point in time, they may go, WhatsApp is now going to start collecting personal identifiable user information. And I bet you 99.9% of the people won't read it and won't be aware of it.
Yeah, I know.
But, I mean, I do, when I put my business person hat on, I think about WhatsApp as a business tool, a money-making revenue tool. I didn't see it because, you know, they're not collecting any personal information, which is, this is gold for Facebook and for Twitter now, looking at, you know, finding ways to monetize what they do. So it kind of made me scratch my head, but hey, if Facebook lives up to it and keeps hands off and information off, I applaud them.
Yeah, let's hope they do. Well, it's interesting. I do have a WhatsApp account. I find it very useful, and you know, I'll continue to use it. But also keep an eye on you know, any updates that come about with 25 pages of terms and conditions.
Yeah, we'll have to keep a close eye on that. I think we need a legal team here at some point.
I think so. The LTS Radio legal section of our huge empire that we have. Now, moving along, emerging details about Apple's forthcoming health book app suggest the tech giant is asserting itself as a platform for digital health, a clearinghouse for data that could potentially prove as useful, revealing, and lucrative as the ad profiles that drive the online economy today. The company's activity also raises questions about its plans to develop new medical sensors, possibly including a bloodless glucose monitor, integrate existing ones into forthcoming wearable devices, or partner with companies developing these capabilities. Apple, along with other tech companies, are equally eager to plant themselves at the center of the health ecosystem, a sector that adds up to 17.9% of the United States gross domestic product. There's big money in this, Todd. And Apple seems to be being aggressive and trying to get into this very lucrative market for sure.
Now, do we have a few minutes to talk about my issue yesterday?
I was wondering if you wanted to talk about it.
Well, okay, so, you know, I've had a, you know, I just wanted to make sure my blood pressure was okay. So I saw this wonderful snazzy device that is wireless. So it's Bluetooth, sits on your wrist, measures your blood pressure at predetermined intervals, or you could do it as often as you like manually. Yeah. And it sends the information to your smartphone and creates a log that you can then quickly email, download, share with your doctor. So anyways, I get it. There's no calibration whatsoever. You basically position it. It tells you if you're in the right spot. And then okay. It says, go ahead and do the reading. So I did the reading. And wouldn't you know, my first reading was like 175 over like 116. Goodness. So I'm thinking, well, that's not good.
No.
So I took a bunch more readings. And the lowest I got was 150. And I thought, oh, I'm in trouble. Called my doctor. She said, come in right away. I went in, checked it. And she said, it's fine. So... long story short, something's up with this device. Maybe it wasn't sitting correctly, whatever. I did buy it at the Apple Store. No fault of Apple's. I mean, they're just supplying a product, but they were very understanding and said, bring it back. You know, if it's giving you wacky readings, you know.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it was kind of comical that you brought this up today because they're spending a lot of money getting into this market segment, but they might need to figure out how to screen or test the devices that they're selling.
Exactly, like the reliability and, you know, maybe it's just a matter of, you know, doing something to calibrate it that wasn't relayed in the instruction. So it could be many different things. And I'm just concerned about people solely relying on these types of devices, you know, instead of going for regular medical care. So,
well, that is a concern as well. And I mean, if I were anyone else, there would have been a 911 call going on saying, I think I'm dying. Come pick me up.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, if somebody else had seen that, they might have panicked. And
of course.
And then wouldn't Apple be embarrassed? Or wouldn't the company that made this be embarrassed?
I know. They're leaving themselves open to a lot of scrutiny. And let's face it, well, maybe in Canada, but specifically in the U.S., lawsuits potentially if readings are incorrect or didn't warn of something pending when it should have. It's a pretty scary thought that they're pouring so much money into such an unstable market for sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, lastly, before we take our break, Todd, and we're going to dedicate an entire show to this next week. We've talked about this for many weeks, but I think it's time that we definitely do this. NSA is posing as a popular site is probably common, says several experts. The revelations that the U.S. National Security Agency impersonated Facebook in order to spread malware on suspect computers is probably not the only time the agency has masqueraded as a popular site to get data, security experts claim. I'm sure it already has. This tactic is not only for intelligence use, but cyber criminals also use the same tactic, said Jeff Barden, founder of Treadstone 71, a cyber intelligence firm. This news is not surprising at all. You are going to use any tactic to collect information that is not a new tactic. People may act surprised, but that's nothing new, he went on to say. According to data recently leaked by Edward Snowden, the NSA lured people into visiting what looked like a normal Facebook page, but was actually using the social media site as a launching pad to infect the target's computer and infiltrate files from a hard drive. The information was first reported in The Intercept by Ryan Gallagher and Glenn Greenwald. Barden, who is a former Air Force intelligence officer, said that it's also common for cyber criminals to build a website that looks exactly like the target site and make it so a visitor can enter their credentials and be then transferred into the actual site. Next week, we're going to dedicate the entire show to the NSA situation. And also here in Canada with CSIS and the different intelligence organizations and what they're doing, and as far as infiltrating and using social media to find out information. I think it's going to be a really good show. We're going to try to line up some guests as well. And that will be next Thursday on LTS Radio, 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern.
And some of you may have been reading about the Canadian government testing out being able to track digital devices through an unnamed Canadian airport. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And just hopefully the NSA won't be listening. You're not going to be listening next week, are you, NSA?
Yes. NSA, do not listen. Do not listen, NSA.
Edward Snowden was in Vancouver the other day via Skype. It was amazing. There was a conference there and he showed up via virtually, which is really cool. So we'll see if we can get him on this show next week.
He might be busy,
but we'll try.
We'll give it our best shot.
All right.
All right, well, LTS Radio, we'll be back after these messages. LTS Radio. Instead of our weekly social shout out this week, I thought it would be timely to warn people of the dangers of carbon monoxide poisoning. The tragedy that occurred in Brampton, Ontario, Canada this week that killed three people was a horrific accident that shows how deadly carbon monoxide poisoning is. Carbon monoxide is an odorless, colorless, tasteless gas that can leak from your indoor heating or cooling systems, or even through your garage from your car exhaust. It is important to install a mechanism that will detect carbon monoxide leakage if it happens. Just like a smoke detector, it is important in your home to detect smoke in the event of a fire. A carbon monoxide detector is important to protect yourself and your family against this invisible killer. This is especially true if you have taken energy conservation measures and sealed the cracks in your home, as this can make your home more vulnerable to backdrafting, a process in which fuel-burning devices draw in air through vents intended for combustion exhaust. The best place to install a carbon monoxide detector is near where you sleep, so that is on the alert even if you are not. It is also helpful to have one near the fuel-burning systems that you are using. I personally knew the deceased and their family for close to 25 years. My most sincere condolences go out to Paul, Jerry, and the family of Peter, Sita, and Sweet Terry. I will remember and cherish all of the good times that we shared. That concludes this edition of the Link Through Social Media Tech and App Show. Thank you very much for joining us. We'd like you to share and spread the word about our show and continue the conversation on Twitter using hashtag LTS Radio. You can follow me at Link Through, THRU, social, and support this station by following at Listen Up Talk. Make sure you send in your questions, comments, and show ideas. We'll see you next Thursday at 3 and 8 p.m. Eastern on Listen Up Talk Radio. Have a wonderful week.